This is Scott Allen from odecode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Coon from lazycoder.com.
Hey, this is John. I'd like to take a quick second to plug the charity Fragathon. That's Fragathon, F-R-A-G-A-T-H-O-N, as in Halo 3. So the idea is you pay 10 bucks, you enter a Halo 3 tournament, and all the money goes to Children's Hospitals and Clinics of Minnesota. So that's in Bloomington, Minnesota on September 24th, and you can look it up at charityfragathon.com. On with the show.
Welcome to this week's edition of Herding Code. Our guest this week is Matthew Podwysocki. Matthew is a senior consultant at Microsoft Consulting Services, living in the D.C. area. He blogs at codebetter.com/Matthew.Podwysocki. That's P-O-D-W-I-S-O-C-K-I. He's been instrumental in setting up a Washington, D.C. alt.net user group and organizing some of the alt.net conferences. And we invited him in to talk about F-sharp and functional programming. So welcome.
Thank you. So yeah, the functional programming seems that everyone seems to be talking about nowadays.
Question number one is what is functional programming?
Well, it's kind of a big topic, actually. Really, the first kind of points that you want to talk about is everything's immutable by default. So what does that mean? Well, when you assign something, well, it's now assigned. There is no such thing as changing that value. Kind of think of your imperative or object-oriented programming where you say int x equals 42. Well, what you're doing is you're assigning the value of 42 to a bucket called x. Instead, when you think about functional programming, is you think of x as a name, and 42 happens to be the value assigned to that name, so they're kind of interchangeable. So by that way, you're assigning a name to that particular thing instead of assigning values into a bucket. That's the easiest way I can explain that. In terms of other things, functions as first-class values. So say, for instance, in C-sharp or whatever, we have such constructs as delegates. Delegates are pretty much functions. So they're also treated as first-class citizens in the .NET space. But not only that, you can pass them into functions, you can methods, you can do whatever you need to with them. But since immutability is really kind of a thing that we need to talk about, so how do you actually do mutation? Well, you don't. Instead, you favor such things as good old CS topics such as recursion in order to go through there and do your accumulators or whatever you need to do to get a value back, such as calculating the length of a list or whatever. So immutability and also purity is also a pretty big topic. Purity means I do nothing more than take the inputs, and then I produce the outputs. And I'm not modifying any global state. There is no global state. And not only that, is that if I pass in the same thing, I will get the same result each and every time. The conciseness of functional programming is really a key thing because, you know, when you're, say, for instance, in your .NET 1.1 world, when you wanted to filter a collection, what did you do? Well, you had to iterate through each one. You had to check and see, oh, does this one fit? Okay, then I'm going to add this to a list or do whatever. For it to .NET 2.0, then you had the yield, but you still have to have that clumsiness, and then you got to link, and you're like, oh, I can see from my collection .where, boom. I don't have to worry about those lists anymore. You know, that the for eaches and all that, and that's really where functional programming really shines, is just the fact that you can collapse your code by so much by using functions, passing functions around, say, yeah, do this here.
Can I ask a couple of questions on immutability real quick? Like,
sure.
From the point of view of in the C-sharp world, you know, the way we've all heard immutable is when we talk about strings. And so we're told that just concatenating or changing a string is not good for performance because internally it's creating a new string for us, a new string object for us each time. And like, so as I was playing with F sharp, getting ready to talk about this, I said, you know, let test equals monkey. And then on the next line, I said, let test equals spaghetti. And it was just fine. It said, okay, you've got a new string, and it's,
if you're doing it through the interactive console, what you actually did is you just redefined what test was. You didn't actually change the value of test, unless you have to specify let mutable string equals this, and then you have to use a left arrow to modify the value of it. But that's a side topic.
Okay.
But really, what you're getting at, yeah, is quite important, is the fact that, yes, it does add a little bit of overhead if you're doing nothing but these little strings and so on, and keep on adding them to the stack. But that's why we have garbage collection, and if they're short-lived and such, that it should relatively not be a problem.
So when you're talking about the immutability of everything in F-sharp, functions, strings, and the purity, where you just take the inputs, produce the outputs, it sounds a lot like, or at least as far as functions go, in F-sharp is defined as a closure. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, that would be kind of accurate, yeah.
You have a much better definition, I'm sure, which I'm waiting to hear.
Well, yes, you'd be correct about the closures and the way that it modifies it behind the scenes. Well,
because, I mean, a string is a string is a string, or a variable is a variable, but functions are special, I guess.
You think of a closure as just a lambda expression, yeah. That one's just like, yeah, it's a first-class function, yeah. So we'll have such things as lambda expressions, and then you have the free variable inside that you can do with whatever you want to.
So the next question, we know a little bit about functional programming now. We've sort of skimmed the surface, but the next question might be, why would I want to know about this? Where would it be important? Where could I use this?
Okay. Well, when you think about a lot of the things that I've talked about, you think about immutability. Well, let's go to Moore's Law. Moore's Law is changing in a way that is basically, it's not getting any faster, but it's changing in a way that we're adding more and more cores, so we're going to look for more and more opportunities for parallelism. So if you think about the imperative code, you've got mutation happening pretty much willy-nilly. You can feel free to mutate this, mutate that, and if you decide to parallelize it, well, then you might have a little bit of difficulty tracking where exactly you're writing and what exactly you're doing, because there is no real intention-driven anything for when you're doing the imperative-style programming. Instead, in functional programming, since it's immutable, it's a little bit easier to make it parallel. It doesn't automatically say that, oh yeah, everything you're going to do is automatically parallelizable because it can be evaluated any time. Because order actually might matter in a collection. Say, for instance, I want to process a list in order. Well, you can't exactly do that in a parallel fashion, not efficiently. So I think the parallel story is one of the bigger stories here. Another story is a lot of people are just frustrated by the fact that they have to create classes and structures and interfaces to do very simple tasks. When I show some of my code samples on, say, such things as pattern matching, which is the ability to break a structure down or whatever into case statements, very concise case statements, that gives people the ability to think, well, gee, I don't need all this if-then-else's case statements or whatever. I can just write patterns, and then suddenly I've programmed my intent without having to know all the underlying implementations. So those are kind of the conciseness and the parallelizability are two of the big topics of why you might want to do that.
If you're looking at it from an application point of view, are there certain applications where it's just naturally going to fit in? Like, I've heard people talk about digital processing, image processing, that kind of thing, where you're working through large data sets. Is that kind of the area? I mean, I wouldn't think, well, I want to build out a website in F#, although I guess it's possible, but You know, what are the sorts of applications where you'd want to do that?
Yeah, I too have seen a lot of those things, such as websites and whatever. People actually, I saw, I think today someone was doing a web part in SharePoint using F#, but I don't think that's really the key kind of place for functional programming. Where I like to think of it is yeah, definitely in the big data problems, such things as, say, the TruScale algorithm that was written for the Xbox to be able to do the Halo 3 player rankings was done in F# and done in a very functional manner and, quite frankly, a lot less code than the C# version. So when you're dealing with a lot of data like that, F# actually makes a lot of difference. The ability to concatenate functions together, functions and functions and functions, allows people to basically take a input data set and just run it through a set of functions really quite easily and get some pretty impressive results. And everyone I've shown at all the user conferences always are pretty astounded by how concise I'm able to make the code through some of these transforms. So a lot of people on Wall Street are also using functional languages for their algorithms, especially since they're dealing with very large data sets. So there's another place where large data, once again, plays into it.
So would an application that uses F# be sort of a hybrid? Would you typically have some sort of C#-y kind of application stuff and then sort of a data processing engine that leverages the power of F#?
Well, quite frankly, I've actually thought about this quite a bit, actually, where I said, well, why couldn't we have a Iron Ruby front end, a C# middle tier, an F# rules engine and heavy lifting where you're doing all your algorithms, and then a SQL back end, those kinds of things, where F# can really leverage a lot of your concise algorithms that you have or rules engines or whatever. That's where it could easily play into kind of some of your apps. But that's not to say that it couldn't be the end-all be-all because of the fact that F# can do object-oriented and imperative-style programming as well. But many people already know C# and already have an investment in C#, and quite frankly, well, F# can play there too. Can play with anyone else in a nice way. So, absolutely, the polyglot programmer comes into play here, because if you're talking about adding Ruby and C# and F# and SQL and whatever into a single application, you're leveraging various things for their right purposes, quite frankly.
So, Matt, I'm kind of wondering the inverse of this question. What kinds of things is F# not really suited for?
That's a good question. Well, currently, F# doesn't really have any designer support for much of anything. So if you're expecting to do nice GUI programming with F#, well, it's not really where it's going to be happening right now, at least. I can't imagine saying add new ASP.NET MVC project in F#. So those are kind of the things that I don't think right now are kind of the key audience. What the key audience really is some of the big data problems, some of the mass parallelization. Language-oriented processing, creating DSLs, is also very powerful in F#. I've created a thing called FSX units, which is just doing some language-oriented processing over an assertion language. So I could say true should be true, false should be false, or whatever.
So I'm kind of wondering if maybe either compilers or interpreters would be a good area for F# or some sort of functional language.
Absolutely. And in fact, Harry Pearson has some great posts on that, creating some parsers in F#. F# originally was a language created to create other languages, so some of those things are built right into it. The ability to mark code as expressions is quite powerful to turn things into expressions. But not only that, you have Lex and Yak libraries also built into F# as well. So absolutely, building parsers and such are some of the things that it's good for.
I kind of think that there's hope for doing graphical GUI programming, maybe widgets. JavaScript is a very functional language, And Lord knows there's enough widgets created with JavaScript out there now.
JavaScript is great for doing those little widgets, but F-sharp can do that as well. There's really nothing stopping you from doing any particular WinForms or WPF apps. In fact, I've done some WPF apps in F-sharp, but the fact is that you don't have the real designer support for it. There was a great project that I think Robert Pickering and both he and I worked on, at least helped someone, was a ant colony simulator that someone had posted. And he and I both worked on it and got it to optimize to do some really cool stuff with some asynchronous behavior and some parallel behavior so that you had four panes of ant colony simulations going in parallel, and it was really cool. So, yeah, GUI programming is actually something that you can do quite well in F#. But like I said, if you're very dependent on a designer, it's just not going to work for you right now.
All right, Matt, I have a question, which is, we think of JavaScript as a functional language, and the functions are just objects, and we can pass them around. I can pull off some of the same tricks with C#. So what denotes a true functional language from languages like C# and JavaScript, where we can sometimes get a functional programming style?
Okay. Well, yeah, that's actually a very good point, because I'm actually giving a talk at the Richmond Code Camp coming up, and that's one of the things that I wanted to talk about is, yeah, sure, that C# has, from the very beginning, had some functional constructs, such as since .NET 1.0, since the very beginning, they had things as delegates, and then 2.0 came along, and we got generics, we got lazy evaluation through the yield keyword, and the I enumerable T and whatever. Then when C# 3.0 came along, then we got some better type inference. We got extension methods, expression trees, funcs, actions, whatever, as well as link expressions. So all of that combined are very functional. So when you combine all of those things, it makes a very functional thing. So for instance, some of the high-order functions that you think about through any functional languages, you think of map, filter, reduce, and so on. In link, you have such things as the map function. It happens to be in the select. So for your iQueryable or your enumerable class has the select on it. Then for filtering, you have the where. And for reduce, you have an aggregate and sum. So there are a lot of functional things that you can do in C#. But there are things where it falls down. So, such as the immutability question. There's also a problem in C# is that you can't really generalize a function too much. Meaning that when I say func of t and t result, well, the t result has to return something. It can't be of type void. But in functional languages, you can do that. You can easily say, well, I'm not going to pass back a result. And it's generalized. I can just say f of x, and that's not going to return anything. Whereas I have to make a complete decision ahead of time in C# that, well, I need to know between a func or an action, and that's not optimal for that. And it's funny that there is a guy named Brian Beckman at Microsoft who's a really brilliant guy who's done some really good videos on Channel 9 on monads and functional programming, and he was saying that not treating void as a type was one of the biggest mistakes that C# has made. There are other issues such as tail call recursion isn't supported and those sorts of things, so that even if you do write things in a very tail recursive fashion, it'll still get a nice Stack Overflow.
I thought that C# had a void type, or am I thinking of something else?
It does have a system.void type, but you can't actually use that inside of a func. You can't say func of int and void and do something with it. Instead, you have to use an action delegate instead. And that's kind of the difference. So the fact is that I can generalize a function in F#, where I don't really have to say that it doesn't return anything, it looks the same whether it returns something or not.
All right, so what else can you tell us about F# specifically? Is it dynamically typed, weakly typed, statically typed, strongly typed?
Well, basically, F-Sharp was a language created out of Microsoft Research by Don Syme. And there were many people who wanted some of the functional aspects of, say, Haskell or OCaml, and they wanted it on the .NET platform. So there were earlier attempts in Hugs 98 of getting Haskell onto .NET, but it really wasn't all that successful. So enter Don Syme, the guy who so graciously brought us generics into the .NET platform, went ahead and did this. And so originally it was a language to create other languages, but then it kind of morphed into something more than that. It became a general purpose language with functional programming techniques aspects as being the first class citizen. And then as well, supporting such things as imperative constructs such as fors, whiles, looping, mutables, whatever. And then add on top of that, object-oriented constructs are allowed, such as class structures, interfaces, inheritance, polymorphism, and so on. So there's quite a bit there to that, but the F-sharp language itself is massive in terms of its libraries and so on that are exclusive to F-sharp. So you'll have such things as the Lex, FXLex and FSYAC. You'll also have such things as Mailbox Processor, which is for doing Erlang-style message processing. You can do some asynchronous workflows to do some really cool stuff with being able to parallelize scripts in a pretty concise manner. So there are plenty of pieces to this language that I don't think I've even gotten through completely. They recently released the September 2008 CTP, and in there was a new concept called units of measure, which is the ability to treat such things as kilograms and pounds and such as different things, and to be able to do some special marking on them. It's really kind of a cool thing that if you look on Luca Bolognese's blog and Andrew Kennedy's blog, they actually have some really good stuff there. So that's kind of the brief overview of what F-sharp is. So it's functional, it's imperative, and it's object-oriented, and there are lots of other libraries that come with it.
If I'm remembering correctly, I think you and Dustin kind of convened a talk at Alt.NET Seattle about functional OOP, or was that you and Harry?
That might have been Harry and me. I know Dustin did a talk as well. Unfortunately, I was over with the SpecSharp guys talking with them during one of those sessions, so I didn't get to catch all of that. But actually, what I'm doing right now on my blog is I'm actually starting up that very same thing of object-oriented functional programming with F-sharp. So I can use some best-of-breed functional techniques as well as some object-oriented techniques as well. The first parts that I've already done is extension everything in F-sharp, which is the ability to add on properties, methods, static methods, events, and so on to any particular class that you want to. In comparison with C-sharp, where you can only really do extension methods at this current time. So that's kind of the intro to my talks that I'll be doing, and hopefully along the line I'll be doing some user groups or some CodeCamp discussions on that as well.
So have people been using F-sharp as a scripting language? Is that possible?
Absolutely. In fact, that's with the latest CTP, you can create some scripts, and then you can run them through the interactive quite nicely. And actually, Chris Smith and I believe Jomo Fisher have both done some pretty cool stuff on their blogs with automating Excel or doing any number of things through there. I actually, I've been doing it myself where I've never really been much of a PowerShell guru myself, but since I already know F-sharp, I've been able to pretty much do a large number of scripts right then and there through the interactive and make them nice and repeatable.
What other cool things are people doing with the language? You mentioned the player rankings for Xbox Live.
Mm-hmm.
Using it as a scripting language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's actually also another blog series going on called F-Sharp for Game Programming. And that one also looks pretty cool, to be able to do some physics calculations and so on and so forth using some of the units of measure, which I had talked about earlier when I talked about kilograms and pounds and so on. So that's another really cool aspect that people are starting to take these things, such as game programming, which can be highly algorithmic, and putting F-sharp to the case there.
Is anyone building any business intelligence libraries with this? Like data mining type stuff? Generic libraries?
Generic data mining libraries, that's a good question. I'm not really sure. Okay. I would think that they might be able to do any number of things, such as kind of a MapReduce or a Hadoop-like implementation using F-sharp, that there really should be no kind of limit to what it can do, especially when it's already answered some of the big data problems.
You've posted recently just about pattern matching, and that seems like a really interesting area. How does that relate to, you know, some of the things we normally think of, C-sharp constructs? You've got switch statements, or you've got like even a regular expression. How is this different from that?
Well, basically what we can do here with pattern matching is basically we can break a data structure or whatever we need to break to match upon into a set of cases. And with that, we can use such things as guarded ranges. We can do literal values, .NET types, and so on to determine the patterns in there. So as you can see, it's rather concise. I don't need the if, else if, case, switch, blah, blah, blah. Instead, what I can do is I can do some pretty advanced stuff, such as data structure mapping by going over a list and parsing over a list to be able to, say, match this expression with and continue on. And to be able to break a list into smaller pieces through pattern matching. Regular expressions, you could do that through such constructs as, say, for instance, an active pattern, which is to extend the pattern matching beyond what it's already doing, such as the literal values, guarded ranges, and data structures, .NET types, and so on, to add such things as regular expressions. On my blog post, actually, I added one to determine whether a particular number that you give me is a prime, composite, or neither, and to be able to pattern match on something like that. Trying to do that with C-sharp kind of looks a little bit more clumsy.
So I have a question that Matt may or may not be able to answer, or anyone else may be able to answer this. So we're kind of looking at this from the functional language point of view. I'm thinking about how the managed language story has changed in SQL Server, and how you can, you know, basically T-SQL is a functional programming language. And I'm wondering if you'd be able to write, if anyone has heard about being able to write extended stored procedures or things like that in F-sharp at some point in the future. If it's going to be a first-class language in the IDE, I'm wondering if that will extend to SQL Server or anything else.
And I don't see why not, quite frankly. That I've heard all sorts of rumblings from the F-sharp team that they would absolutely love to see a case like this. That SQL, yes, is a nice functional language, but F-sharp actually does quite a nice job in there as well. And I've tried to experiment a little bit there, but I never really got too far involved in it, but absolutely, I see it as a huge opportunity for doing user-defined functions, stored procedures, and what have you there.
I've been looking at different methods of scrubbing HTML. So I've got HTML, which may or may not contain bad input, and I partly got into this because I was working with Jeff on testing out different methods for Stack Overflow and cleaning up user input. So I'm just wondering if this is something where, you know, I understand string matching is different than the pattern matching thing, but is there a way, you know, breaking HTML into XML, or how functional programming would make that challenge easier?
Okay. Well, if you're talking about doing regular expression matching, is that what you're talking about?
What I'm asking is, understanding functional programming, how would you approach the challenge of cleaning up or manipulating HTML? Would you approach that any differently, or would you just say, no, that's really, keep doing what you're doing, that's a C-sharp problem? Or is there a way that you would apply the tools that are available in functional programming to cleaning up possibly unstructured HTML?
Unstructured HTML. Well, that's an interesting one, because honestly, I thought about this before, and I was like, well, if I could really parse HTML well, you could build it into a very nice tree and do some tree parsing. But if you're doing just plain old HTML parsing, absolutely, you could break it into a collection. You could do some filtering functions. The ability to take a given string and apply functions to it, sure, you can do that. I'm trying to think here, what would be a really good way to do this? But
would it change the question if it was well formed? If it was XHTML?
Mm-hmm. Sure. If it's well formed HTML, and you just wanted to say, for instance, I could break it into a tree and then do tree parsing that way. Absolutely. Where you could start applying functions to given nodes and say, okay, nodes of this type, I'm going to clean up these nodes here through any filtering functions. Sure. And pattern matching, you could pattern match over that given HTML tree, and that's the way I might be doing it, if you can semi-structure it that way.
Yeah, that was one of the first things I thought about when I saw that post. Because I've been walking some hierarchical data structures lately, and one common solution to that in C#, if you have to visit, say, different nodes in a tree and then perform different behaviors depending on what type that node is, whether it's a animal, cat, dog, by default, a lot of people in C++ and C# land will turn to a visitor pattern, which I've always had sort of a love-hate relationship with, because... Well, you know, in C#, it would come down to two things. Either you implement a big switch statement that says, okay, if it's a cat, do this. If it's a dog, do this. And then go to the next node. But, you know, the object-oriented approach would be the visitor pattern, which is great, but it has some drawbacks, too. The first thing I thought of with pattern matching is that would be a really eloquent way just to switch into what behavior that I wanted to, but without actually writing a switch statement.
Exactly.
Would that be?
You just, okay. Absolutely. Absolutely would be a very nice way of doing it. Another way I've thought about doing those kinds of things is using such things as discriminated unions, which allow us to kind of classify data in such a way that if you think about it in C# terms, would be you have an abstract base class of, say, tree, and then I would have... type subtypes would be of leaf, or I'd have one of node. So I would have the tip would be the top, and then you would have a node which would have any number more of nodes. So you could break it down that way. So it's F# is very flexible even in creating types, that you can do some really concise type management that you don't need to say public class blah inherits this. Instead, you have some really nice concise data types such as tuples, which basically you just put some data within some parentheses and it suddenly becomes one piece of data. You could create a record type. You could have some sort of semi-structured data, or you could have a discriminated union where you could have semi-related data all under one banner so that you could pattern match against it. Or you could just do the regular .NET classes. So, once again, the language is pretty flexible that way.
John, you have any follow-up questions?
No, I don't. To be completely honest, I'm going to have to listen to that as I'm editing and completely understand it. Because as I was playing with F# today, it made so much more sense as I just typed code and ran it I guess there's just no real substitute for actually writing some code and writing... You know, some pattern, like obviously referencing what you've written, but to me, I just, it would be nice if there were shortcuts, but I just think that in order for me to really get it, I'm going to have to do that more.
That leads into the next question, actually.
The
next logical question would be if someone wants to give F# a try, well, first of all, what should they do? And also, what state is it in now? I think you mentioned CTP, right?
correct. As of end of August, early September, the F-Sharp team released the September 2008 CTP, which is now available through Microsoft. So you can download the MSI, which will install nicely into Visual Studio, or if you believe that you're going to use Mono or whatever, you can just download the zip file and start playing with F-Sharp on Mono. And you shouldn't have any real issues, so you can use Mono Develop and whatever and get going. One of the easiest ways I thought of learning how to do F-Sharp was actually reading the source code. They're ever so kind to actually include the source code for F-Sharp as part of the download. So you can go ahead and say, okay, well, I really want to learn out on how they're doing list processing. Well, you can open up their particular class file and just start plowing right through it. And to learn how to do real proper F-Sharp, maybe that's the best way to learn. There are some good books out there as well. Expert F-Sharp, of course, by Don Syme, would be probably one of the hallmark books on the subject that I would definitely recommend that you get it, even though some of the concepts are a little outdated since the CTP. Most of the stuff still works, though. Foundations of F-Sharp by Robert Pickering's is also a nice book, but it's even more dated, so a lot of the stuff just won't work anymore. But the ideas themselves still hold. Just as well, F-Sharp for Scientists by Dr. John Harrop of Flying Frog Consultancy just released his F-Sharp for Scientists, and it's a very good book so far. I'm really impressed with it, and if you want to do some graphical processing and such, that's to do some real good algorithm stuff, that'd be a good place. As well, there's also some good sites that you can go to, HubFS, which is a place where everyone likes to come and contribute and talk on the forums and such. So even Don Syme hangs out there every so often. So the creator of the language might be able to answer your question for you. The F-Sharp team blogs as well. You have Luke Hoban, who unfortunately doesn't blog all that much, but you have Chris Smith, who's a tester on the F-Sharp team. He blogs regularly. Jomo Fisher has started to blog regularly again, thankfully, as well as Brian McNamara as well. So the F-Sharp team has really kicked it up into high gear, and I'm really thankful for it. And gives someone else to talk about F-Sharp instead of just me sometimes. Also, a good way is to just crack open F-Sharp Interactive and just start typing. You'll get that nice instant feedback loop of what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong. And that's a really fun part, is to just do some searches on the internet, pull up some code, and just plug it right into Interactive and see what happens.
You know, I tried that today, and I installed F-Sharp, and then I did file new C-Sharp project, and one of the project types is a tutorial, and I played with it a little bit, and one of the things that it prompted me to do was hit Alt Enter on some code, and boom, like it was evaluating that code in the Interactive window, and I just started playing around in the F-Sharp Interactive window, and it was really cool to just be able to just have that immediate feedback, like you're saying. It was a great way to, without setting up a lot of stuff to get a project going, I could just type a line and evaluate it and see what happened.
Absolutely. That's one of the best ways to learn, absolutely, is just pick up a sample somewhere. Just copy it into your Visual Studio, hit Alt-Enter, and boom, it shows up on your Interactive window, and sure enough, you get some great results, and then you can further play with the functions and say, well, what if I give it this input? What's going to happen?
One thing that I wondered is how to interoperate between, like, let's say I create a cool little class here and I want to use it within C#. So I want to create, like, let's say I solve my problem with pattern matching HTML, and then I say, okay, this is great F# code. I want to use this and reference it from within C#. How do I go about doing that? Can I just add an F# file to my ASP.NET project and then put some cool attributes on it and interoperate, or is it a lot more complex?
No, actually, it should just work that way. To be able to use the F# compiler through doing that, just as well, you could go into Visual Studio and add a new library project and bundle up all of your particular stuff into a particular library, And if you're going to want to be a full citizen within C Sharp, you would probably want to follow some object-oriented principles to kind of wrap all those miscellaneous functions that you have into a tight ball of code. So you just wrap it in a class and say, okay, well, here's my entry point.
I think that's really cool to be able to think about, like, I don't have to write entire F-sharp projects to be able to start getting some use out of this in areas where I can define my problem functionally as opposed to going through the statically typed constructs. I can just weave it in and continue on.
Well, just keep in mind that F-sharp is a statically typed language, actually very statically typed, in fact, a little bit more statically typed than C-sharp is. So the ability to do some weaving would be interesting, especially when I think of AOP, I think of functional programming, quite frankly. But that's a different topic.
So I've got kind of two questions, one related to John's and one that's kind of back to getting started in F-sharp.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one is, do you have to structure your F-sharp functions or code differently if you think you're going to call it from C-sharp, VB.NET, or some other .NET language? I mean, it's a different language, but it still compiles down to IL, right? Based on the 2.0 runtime, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's still based upon the 2.0 runtime. It's got its own compiler, but there are some places where it doesn't quite jive in terms of using fast func instead of the normal func or action that we're used to. So that isn't a full quite citizen just yet, but I haven't really looked back at that. But you kind of have to, in a way, think about it, but Here's what I do to kind of mitigate that is I usually package up all of my code into modules, and it's a good way to package up for reuse. As you put all of you can put functions, you can put class definitions, you can put any number of things inside of a given module for future reuse. So there are several classes out there that you can reference as modules. So basically, a module turns into a class at the end of the day. And then you call all the static functions that you want to from C#.
So are these modules, are they namespaced? Or
you can namespace them as well. So I could declare a namespace of CodeBetter and say F#, and then I could also put it into a namespace of, say, common extensions, where I'm going to create a bunch of extension methods that I'm going to be using throughout my F# code, and just package them up that way. So I'm basically packaging up all of my code this way.
So my second question kind of had to do with getting started with mm-hmm. F#. So you mentioned that it's got a ton of libraries, mm-hmm. But is the syntax, is it kind of a pocket language, or does it have an extensive syntax that you have to learn too?
The syntax, well, that's really the fun part about it, is the syntax is flexible enough that you can either really have a lot of fun or really get frustrated. As I showed in my pattern matching examples on my blog, there are multiple ways of even doing pattern matching. There are any number of ways of declaring a class, for instance. You can declare a class with the type constructor and the type definition. You could put a new constructor elsewhere. So it's very flexible, almost frustratingly so sometimes. But if you stick to just a few pieces of the language, you'll do quite well with it.
So you'd mentioned that F# is more statically typed than C#. It's more strict. Mm-hmm. And then on the other end of the scale, you've got dynamic languages. And I'm wondering if it even makes any sense to have like functional languages interoperating with the DLR. Would that all fit together, or is there a case for that?
Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, take a language, for instance, such as Erlang. Erlang is a dynamic language, and it also happens to be functional as well. So for it to do pattern matching, actually, you don't even have to declare the type that you're actually using. You just start writing patterns, and then suddenly, boom, that class becomes defined because you define some patterns. So I could honestly see someone doing something like an Erlang for the DLR. That would be pretty interesting. But in terms of F#, well, F#, yeah, it does kind of care what it's talking to, that sometimes it needs some hints, and especially when you're doing upcasting, downcasting, boxing, and unboxing, it literally needs to be told to do that.
So you mentioned that currently F-Sharp is in CTP mode. Mm-hmm. What are the plans for the full productization of the language? I mean, is it going to be part of the next version of the .NET framework, or will it always be sort of a separate thing?
Well, I can't answer in terms of any shipping schedules because I'm not on the F-Sharp team itself. But what I can say is the fact that the F-Sharp team has kind of split the language. If you looked at it earlier, you would notice that a lot of things were in fsharp.core.dll. But now they've kind of split that into fsharp.core, which is going to be the core language. And then they have an F-Sharp power pack. And what that entails is a good set of libraries that kind of were fringe-ish on the beginning and that they want to kind of evolve over time. So what they're going to do is be able to put things out on CodePlex and let them evolve over time so that you don't have to wait for a full drop of the next a full release cycle of the language again to get some new libraries. Instead, this can evolve much more rapidly. But in terms of any F-Sharp timelines, I'm not sure yet.
You've mentioned that you're not on the F-Sharp team, but you're very heavily involved with it, and you work in Microsoft Consulting Services. Do you, mm-hmm. in your day job, do you do a lot of work with F-Sharp?
Yeah, actually, I've been working very closely with the F-Sharp team in evangelizing the language, especially in some of the key areas that my customers have, such as some of the big data problems. To my customers, they've been facing a lot of the big data problems themselves, that something like a TrueScale or kind of algorithm, those kinds of things might be able to help, is the conciseness of the language, the libraries and so on are really helpful to them. And the financial people as well, they've been using it. They've found some great use for it as well. So I'd love to actually get more involved in the financial sector because they have a lot of really cool stuff for it. But yeah, my customers really do appreciate the conciseness of the language, the new way of thinking about the problems. And it's a work in progress because a lot of the customers are sitting in Python, C, and Java. And for them to make the to cross the chasm to understand functional programming might take a little bit more.
All right. I think we're getting pretty close on time, so maybe just one more round of questions.
Okay.
Mine would be, do you see this becoming a mainstream language, F-Sharp, in the .NET land?
I don't see why not. Quite frankly, you'll always find that most people will probably stick with C# or VB.NET or C++ or whatever their language of choice. But this gives us a whole new opportunity for doing a lot more concise programming, that we don't need a lot of the overhead of classes, that we don't need the overhead of overly elaborate type definitions, when all I want are simple data types and the ability to do some really concise algorithms. I think that it will definitely hit a sweet spot there. And I can see it growing over time, especially as we're starting to look more into making more things parallelizable, just because of the fact that we can be more sure that we're not talking about mutable states, we're not talking about impure functions where we're having global state and so on. So I think it's going to grow there as well. How far it's going to grow, I'm not sure.
Scott Kuhn?
So we're talking about using F-Sharp for, kind of algorithms when we need to refine them or to, just concentrate on the steps. And I can't help but draw a parallel to some other kind of pure algorithmic languages like Lisp and Scheme. And I'm wondering what the advantages of F-Sharp are over Lisp, other than, the Lovecraftian insanity that ensues with Lisp.
Well, what really you get with F-sharp is you're a full citizen within the .NET space, where you can't really say that about Scheme or even Iron Scheme at this point. I'm not even sure how far Iron Scheme is at this point, but F-sharp really has a distinct advantage of being that first-class citizen in the space, so therefore they have a little bit more advantage of the full interop with all of the .NET libraries that it needs to use.
What do you think, John?
Some of the cool features that have come into C-sharp and VB lately have come in from the dynamic side, and I'm wondering if you see constructs or features that will be... You talked about this a little bit before, about things being moved into libraries that could make them more common, but I'm wondering what sort of things you would hope to see move into just mainstream C-sharp support.
Was it dynamic or was it functional?
Well, yeah, okay, I guess that's true. What I'm wondering is if you see some language features or things that you can do in F-sharp, if you see some of those things bleeding over into C-sharp near term, and if so, what your kind of dream features are that you think would be best.
Okay, well, there are many things that actually I'd love to see come to C-sharp for it to be a little bit more of a player in the functional space, because quite frankly, it's a lot more to ask people to learn a new language than it is to learn a new construct within a language. So if you start seeing some of the bleed off, as we already have with a lot of the functional constructs from F-sharp that have already made their way over into C-sharp, such as things like link and so on, generics and type inference and so on and so forth. So where do I see the next things coming? Well, I'm hoping that really the TPL and the parallel extensions kind of standardize on a way that, because I really like the way that F-sharp does asynchronous workflows, is the fact that I really don't have to think much about how I'm doing my asynchronous behavior. When I'm doing it in C-sharp, I have to go, oh gosh, I have to remember how to deal with this iasync result and then end and carry around the state some way, somehow. Or I can wrap it up inside an async computation expression and then just put all that code in line and run it in parallel, and it just works. So those are the kinds of things that I want to think less about concurrency. Not less in terms of modifying global state, but not less in terms of, I don't want to have to remember about having state objects around iasync results, begin and ends, and so on and so forth. I don't like that. I think it's too low of a level, more of assembly level constructs. And I'd rather have more of a high level abstraction. Other things such as better abilities also falls into the parallelizable stuff is just the fact of you can have some of your state be write once. So, for instance, a local variable that's only write once. So making sure that you're not doing something stupid and writing to a place that you shouldn't have written to. Maybe that's a static analysis problem. I'm not sure. But some of those features I'd love to see moving over more towards C-sharp, as well as even recursion be properly handled. It's just not right now in C-sharp, is the fact that even if you do your darndest to do a tail call recursion, it'll still get a nice stack overflow. So those are kind of the things that I see that C-sharp really needs. There are a lot of things that we see that are coming through Charlie Calvert's blog, such as the dynamic stuff, but that's not really all that interesting to me.
Yeah, I kind of see this as being a big thing in grid computing.
Yeah, if you talk about some of the cloud initiatives, if you look up stuff like Dryad, Dryad's a really interesting one, especially the ability to take your Lambda expression and compile it into a program and just throw it out there into the cloud and say, hey, you guys, compute this and get back to me. That's really cool stuff, and they have a program called Dryad Link, actually, that you can write your link expressions against that and just throw your link against it and say, yeah, come back to me when you're done. And so you do all this mass computing there. And they have one for F-sharp as well. And even the compute cluster the compute cluster space as well. In fact, I'm actually working with some people on the on writing some guidance for doing HPC work with F Sharp. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff there.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, it looks like there's three people in, you know, that are really interested in F Sharp, mm-hmm. maybe four. And but there's an awful lot of activity that, you know, it's kind of like a duck. We just don't see the frantic swimming beneath the surface.
Yeah,
there's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, there are a lot of things that I don't know how the F Sharp team actually has time to blog all the time. That they're meeting all sorts of people trying to get adoption at the end of the day, and quite frankly, I'm trying to do the best I can to help that along.
Just I think Ozzy put it in the cloud.
It should be mesh enabled. Yes, I should have a Monads file on my mesh desktop.
There you go.
This is probably using like 1/10 of their brain power. That's why they're able to do all this stuff, because those guys are frighteningly smart.
Yeah, yeah. The F Sharp team's a bunch of smart guys. The guys who really started it, Don Syme and all the other guys at Microsoft Research who came up with the concepts. Yeah, just really, really brilliant guys. I don't know. I just really see kind of the polyglot coming together in such a way that we could see the Iron Ruby or Iron Python on a front end doing the things that it needs to do, and then a C# middle tier of doing the things that it needs to do for your simple business layer, and then any hard number crunching or business rules engine or anything like that could be an F#.
Because like back when I was doing Java apps for scientific consulting firm. I mean, we'd hit a limit, a speed limit with Java and some of the algorithms they were trying to implement, and so we would hand that off to either C, and you know, call it using Jenny, or assembly. And I think that as we get more of these, not necessarily specialized languages, but highly taskable languages, maybe like functional languages, I think we'll start to see the polyglot programmer become more of an institute. Because right now it didn't make a lot of sense to make a Ruby business layer or a C# UI or anything like that, because they kind of all do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
They just do it differently, and the syntax may be a little bit simpler in some cases, but with stuff like F#, there's stuff you just can't do.
Oh, absolutely.
In C#.
That's right. VB and C# are kind of following kind of the parallel or semi-parallel lines there. But yeah, F# is a complete divergence in terms of being able to do any number of things that C# cannot do, such as pattern matching, such as async workflows, such as immutable locals, and so on and so forth. And as well as treating void as a real type. So, of course, they got around it by creating a type called unit, which is behind the scenes, just does nothing. But it's a very concise language. You don't even have to say return when you need to return something. It just figures it out.
I'm curious, well, you were talking about, you know, the whole thing of polyglot programming, and I first started talking to you when we were both playing with Singularity. And I just wondered if there was any overlap there, like if you had looked at Spec# or...
Oh yeah, the Spec# guys and I are good buddies. Mike Barnett and Rustan, I've visited their offices a couple of times when I've been out there. Yeah, they've actually got some really cool ideas that I really do like, just as the Sing# guys have some really cool stuff as well. The Sing# guys are doing, actually did some really interesting stuff with channel contracts and the ability to have SIPs, so that when you want, it really follows the actor model, where if you really want to talk to another process, well, you have to take your state and serialize it and copy it over to someone else. So therefore, it's a lot easier to, if one of your system crashes, then, you don't take down the whole system. And that's really great for parallel applications because you don't want one errant thread to bring down your whole application. So, yeah, the Sing Sharp guys have really done some really cool stuff. I'm like, well, that's almost Erlang-esque and actor model-esque, and I'd really love to see something like that coming to C Sharp as well, is to be able to do something in isolation, and if it falls down, it falls down, but doesn't take down my whole machine with it. They're doing some really cool stuff, and I'm hoping that that we hear more from them.
Yeah, I hope that it doesn't just become another MS research project that gets pulled out at the research conference every year, and nothing really happens with it.
The problem is, quite frankly, that the C-sharp compiler just wasn't written for extensibility, so you couldn't hook in your stuff to do rewriting afterwards. So the problem comes up is, okay, we're writing against the C-sharp 2.0 compiler. How do we get to the next level, the C-sharp 3.0 compiler? Because it's a lot of work.
Right.
And that's
right, except to write their own compiler every time.
Exactly. Which is very frustrating because if you just wanted to add your contracts on top of that, well, that's another layer that you have to manage. So, and there might be breaking changes in between. So until the C-sharp team fixes the compiler to add extensibility points, yeah, I think languages such as Spec-sharp aren't going to go very far.
All right. I want to thank Matthew for coming on and giving us an education on functional programming. Also, I want to thank everyone at is listening to the podcast, and tune in again next week. Good night and good luck.